demonstration time.
Thank you so much. That was the intro from the Beach Boys' old There's a Riot Going On. Today we're hoping to be in touch with a very interesting guest, Miss Tangerine Bolin of Revolution Truth. She was one of the defendants in a case that pitted activist community against the AUMF, against the NDAA. Essentially, it countered the claim and called into constitutional scrutiny whether the president, the executive office, can imprison Americans or otherwise indefinitely with no judicial appeal whatsoever. And in fact, in furtherance of that same goal, not only imprison you indefinitely with no legal recourse, no chance for a trial, no chance for a jury, no chance for a lawyer, but also can in fact take your life. And that's not the Constitution I grew up under. And these people, Chris Hedges, Daniel Ellsberg, and others, challenged this in court and sought a redress. But oddly enough, despite all that we know about the scrutiny, they were told that they had no standing. Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the term of art, standing means none of this applies to you, so sit down and shut up. It's an odd thing. It's an uncomfortable thing when the American citizens have no recourse. I'm going to read you a little something from Truth Dig. This is Chris Hedges' response to this NDAA debacle, this case that went nowhere. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit has dealt a terrible blow to Chris Hedges, Daniel Ellsberg, Noam Chomsky, Tangerine Bolin, and other activists and journalists suing to prevent the indefinite military detention of American citizens. Sections 1021 and 1022 of the National Defense Authorization Act, that's NDAA for short, for 2012 would allow the military to detain indefinitely persons who are deemed to consort with terrorists or those who commit belligerent acts against the United States. Journalists whose job is to do just exactly that, in other words, journalists who consort or spend time with terrorists or investigate them or seek out their point of view, or do research about undercover activity of our own government, whose job is that, would undoubtedly qualify, Hedges has argued. The plaintiffs have had successes and setbacks in court. Here's what Hedges wrote after the Wednesday decision. "This is quite distressing," said Hedges. "It means there's no recourse now either within the executive, legislative, or judicial branches of government to halt the steady assault on our civil liberties and most basic constitutional rights. It means the state can use the military, overturning over two centuries of domestic law, to use the troops on the streets to seize U.S. citizens, strip them of due process, hold them indefinitely in military detention centers. States that accrue to themselves this kind of power, history has shown, will use it. We will appeal, but the Supreme Court is not required to hear our appeal. It is a black day for those who care about liberty." I'm going to read you some of the court's statement. This was the United States Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, argued February 6, 2013, decided July 17, 2013, docket 12-3176, lead 12-3644, con. Christopher Hedges, Daniel Ellsberg, Jennifer Bolin, Noam Chomsky, Alexa O'Brien, U.S. Day of Rage, Kai Wargala, Honorable Brigida, Johnsdottir, MP, versus Barack Obama, individually and as a representative of the United States of America, Leon Panetta, individually and as a representative of the Department of Defense, defendants, appealants, John McCain, John Bonnier, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, Eric Cantor, as representatives of the United States of America, defendants. Before Kearse and Lohr, circuit judges, and Kaplan, district judge, clerk of the court is directed to amend the official caption as shown above. Honorable Louis A. Kaplan, United States District Judge for the Southern District of New York, sitting by designation. Defendants, appellants, seek review of a district court's decision permanently enjoining the enforcement of Section 1021B2 of the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act on the grounds it violates the First and Fifth Amendment. We conclude that Section 1021 has no bearing on the government's authority to detain American citizen plaintiffs and that those plaintiffs therefore lack Article 3 standing. Moreover, the non-citizen plaintiffs have failed to establish sufficient basis to fear detention under the statute to give them standing to seek pre-enforcement review. Vacated and remanded. Let me read that again. Defendants, appellants, seek review of a district court decision permanently enjoining enforcement of Section 1021B2 of the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act on the grounds that it violates the First and Fifth Amendment. The judges, we conclude that Section 1021 has no bearing on the government's authority to detain the American citizen plaintiffs and that those plaintiffs therefore lack Article 3 standing. Moreover, the non-citizen plaintiffs have failed to establish a sufficient basis to fear detention under the statute to give them standing to seek pre-enforcement. So both citizens and non-citizens alike need not fear, because every time all the presidents only behave for the best, and none of them that we want to think of have ever engaged in illegal or unconstitutional activities, so everything's fine. Sit down and shut up. This is from Louis A. Kaplan, District Judge. On September 11, 2011, the 2001, the Al-Qaeda terrorist network attacked multiple targets in the United States with hijacked commercial airliners, killing approximately 3,000 people. A week later, Congress enacted the Authorization for Use of Military Force, the AUMF, which empowered President Bush to use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, and persons responsible for the attack and those who harbored such organizations or persons. 12 years later, the hostilities continue. President Bush and Obama have asserted the right to place certain individuals in military detention without trial in furtherance of their authorized use of force. Substantial litigation has ensued over the scope of presidential military detention authority. That is, whom did Congress authorize the president to detain when it passed the AUMF? December 31, 2011, President Obama signed into law the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2012. Section 1021 of the statute, which fits on a single page, is Congress's first and to date only foray into providing further clarity on that question. Of particular importance for our purposes, Section 1021B2 appears to permit the president to detain anyone who is part of or has substantially supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces. The controversy over Section 1021 was immediate. The government contends that Section 1021 simply reaffirms the authority the government already had under the AUMF, suggesting at times that the statute does next to nothing at all. Plaintiffs take a different view. They are journalists and activists who allegedly fear that the government may construe their work as having substantially supported Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, or associated forces. They contend that Section 1021 is a dramatic expansion of the president's military detention authority, supposedly authorizing the military for the first time to detain American citizens on American soil, As one group of Amici has noted, rarely has a short statute been subjected to more radically different interpretations than Section 1021. The plaintiffs brought this action shortly after the statute was enacted. They sought an injunction barring enforcement of Section 1021 and a declaration that it violates, among other things, their rights under the First and Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution. The district court agreed and entered a permanent injunction restraining detention pursuant to Section 1021B2. It is that decision that we review here. We conclude that the plaintiffs lack standing to seek pre-enforcement review of Section 1021 and vacate the permanent injunction. The American citizen plaintiffs lack standing because Section 1021 says nothing at all about the president's authority to detain American citizens. And while Section 1021 does have a real bearing on those who are neither citizens nor lawful resident aliens and who are apprehended abroad, the non-citizen plaintiffs also have failed to establish standing because they have not shown a sufficient threat that the government will detain them under Section 1021. Accordingly, we do not address the merits of the plaintiff's constitutional claims. So, that's the language. I urge you to look it up. That day, you can effectively say that the Constitution of the United States is no longer in play. I'm going to put on some music, and I'll be right back.
And 1 million soldiers to the war have gone, who may never return again. 10 million mothers' hearts must break for the one who died in vain. Heads bowed down in sorrow in her lonely year, I heard a mother murmur through her tears. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And joy, who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some of the mother's darling boy.
Let nations overrate their future
troubles. It's time to lay the sword and run away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
What victory can tear a mother's heart when she looks at her blighted home? What victory can bring her back all she cared to call her home? Let each mother answer in the years to be, remember that my boy belongs to me.
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And joy, who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy. Let nations arbitrate their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and turn away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier. I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
I brought him up to be my pride and joy.
And joy, who dared to place a musket on his shoulder to shoot some other mother's darling boy. Let nations arbitrate their future troubles. It's time to lay the sword and run away.
There'd be no war today if mothers all would say,
I didn't raise my boy to be a soldier.
This is an anti-war tune from World War One. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to bring on my guest, Miss Tangerine Bolin of Revolution Truth. Good afternoon and welcome.
Thank you so much, Rick. Nice to be here.
Oh, we're so glad you could talk to us. Obviously, this is a story that's on everybody's lips. They're not talking about the royal baby. They're not talking about the latest starlet. Everyone's talking about the NDAA decision, I wish. So,
I was going to say, don't we wish.
Tangerine, why don't you tell us what's happened?
So, as some of your listeners probably know, we sued over the National Defense Authorization Act last year. The NDAA allowed for indefinite detention based on suspicion alone of consorting with terrorists of some sort. And we sued and we won. It was appealed. It went to the Second Circuit. And on Wednesday this past week, the Second Circuit three-judge panel ruled against us and in favor of the government, basically allowing indefinite detention to stand. So the fight continues. We're not dead yet, but it's been quite a fierce battle in court over whether we lose or keep due process, essentially, and the First Amendment.
Let me ask you a question. You know, it seems to me you don't have to strain a neuron or two to think of a case where, because information was released to the press, that person is being held under penalty of treason for aiding and abetting the enemy. We have another case where a lawyer who took information from her client to get that word out is being held in prison. It seems to me that standing isn't too hard to find if you're actually looking for it.
Right. Although I'd say there seems to be a double standard that has been developing around standing. I mean, standing is granted in particular cases that the government is Let me back up. So it just seems really, really like people are being held. You know what? I got to back up. I'm sorry, Rick.
That's okay. That's okay. I'm sure that all of this has been rattling around your head back and forth six ways from Sunday for months now. So just take a moment.
I can actually speak to standing in our case. The five plaintiffs from the U.S. were not granted standing. The two non-citizen plaintiffs, one from Iceland and one from Germany, were granted standing, but they couldn't prove that they had been harmed. And what's so bizarre about standing these days is essentially the judges said that we were not indefinitely detained, so we didn't have standing, we couldn't say we had been harmed. And yet standing is not evolving to match this wider milieu where our rights are being assaulted on every front. The rule of law itself is being completely undermined. The judges and the courts are kowtowing to this at least partially disingenuous national security narrative. And in that milieu, we are continually denied standing. And we're denied standing often based on state secrets. You know, we can't know whether we're the target of surveillance. We can't know who has been indefinitely detained. Everything is a secret. So there's no way for us to prove these kinds of things, and then we're denied standing. So it's a mess, standing needs to evolve to match the arena.
I was just reading some samples from the ruling, and this particular section really caught my eye. The AUMF, enacted on September 18, 2001, provides the president is authorized to use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, or persons he determined, planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks that occurred on September 11, 2001, or harbored such organizations or persons in order to prevent any future acts of international terrorism against the United States by any nations, organizations, or persons. We have such broad language defining these. And, think of the current president any way you want. We've had enough history in the last 200 years to know that presidents come with a mixed bag of morality. And while we may all think the best of the current president, one doesn't have to think too hard to imagine what might get elected when you consider some of the opportunities we're offered.
Well, and there's something really problematic here, and I don't want to get too in-depth into the complexities of this case because it's pretty confusing, but just in a nutshell, there's been a constant conflation of two different laws, the AUMF that you just mentioned and read an excerpt from, and the NDAA, and what the NDAA did was add two new terms to the law, the associated forces and substantial support, and neither of those terms have ever been defined in any law anywhere. They're completely nebulous and ambiguous, and they could be used to encompass a much wider swath of people than is intended in either the NDAA or AUMF. That's why we sued, because we saw that journalists and activists and others who were sticking their necks out could be, you know, swept up under the gambit of this new, very ambiguous language. And there's also another ambiguity, which is, does the AUMF itself actually allow the indefinite detention of U.S. citizens on U.S. soil? While the government has continually said no, probably not, they've never actually definitively said no, it doesn't. And we tried to clarify that with the NDAA. You know, even the ruling itself says you don't have standing because the military cannot detain U.S. citizens on U.S. soil. Then they contradict themselves and they say, but the NDAA doesn't change existing law, and there's ambiguity about whether the AUMF allows for that. So at the end of the day, we're no closer to having a solution to this conundrum than we were at the outset, and the question still remains. Can we be indefinitely detained? And it doesn't just apply to U.S. citizens. I don't think anyone anywhere on this planet should be able to be indefinitely swept up by the U.S. military, kept in a secret cell somewhere with no access to family or friends to advocate on their behalf, based on suspicion alone and secret evidence at that. That's not democratic. It's absolutely frightening, and it's no wonder people are really angry at this country.
Well, again, anyone with even a cursory passing acknowledgement of what's going on in the world has to be aware of the multiple cases of whistleblowers, the multiple cases of leaked former embarrassing semi-secrets that were only available to millions, to understand that the idea of releasing some information that may be embarrassing can basically get one a chair in the invisible room for indefinite periods of time.
Well, and even the ruling this past week saying that a journalist cannot protect their source. I mean, this is an all-out assault on journalism and the First Amendment by extension. And it's just shocking coming from a president who is a constitutional law scholar. And, I mean, it doesn't make any sense that on every front, whistleblowers are being attacked and prosecuted and journalists are being attacked and prosecuted. So, you know, we're not well down the road of any kind of police state by any means. However, we have the infrastructure and the laws to go down that road. And that's not acceptable in a democratic republic, period.
Tangerina, I was talking to a guest yesterday on the show who is a Palestinian. He lives in Nablus. And he said, the situation with Israel is really kind of interesting. Of course, that's my interpretation of it. He said, you know, sometimes the guards are at the checkpoint, sometimes they're not. But you kind of always have it in the back of your mind that they could be there. And I think this, the enacting of all these laws where, well, if they wanted to, they could grab you, is certainly, you know, down that same road of you have to watch your step, you have to pay attention to what you're talking about. You have to be aware that you're constantly being monitored, that your face is being tracked from place to place. All your transactions are monitored, all your phone conversations, your email communications. Not that we're going to do anything about it, but we just want you to know that we know. It seems to me far, far from the land of the free and the home of the brave that we once thought existed.
Well, and you know what? You make a really good point there. And in fact, that's why we alleged that the NDAA had a chilling effect on free speech and association. And we actually won the strongest ruling a federal judge could hand down last September. She completely agreed that it had a chilling effect. The same thing with the NSA surveillance revelations in thanks to Edward Snowden. I'm friends with Thomas Drake, the NSA high-level NSA whistleblower. He knows several other NSA whistleblowers. They all completely agree that they have altered their speech. They're self-censoring in light of both the NDAA and the NSA surveillance. And that right there, that is a complete trespass across the First Amendment. It contravenes the First Amendment. When our citizens are self-censoring like that, maybe not the everyday average Joe who hasn't worked in the NSA. He's not self-censoring. But people who have worked for the NSA and know what's going on behind closed doors, they are. And that's against the law. That's a terrible precedent to set, and it's very frightening. So, you know, we're trying to combat this on a few fronts. And I mean, we had a big loss last week, but the fight's not over. We hope the Supreme Court will take this, and we've got a few options even before then. So,
well, those of us who care about the Constitution, who care about liberty, know that you're on the front lines of the battlefield, and we certainly appreciate what you're doing. You know, I want to put this in one more context as well. You're a freedom fighter, and you're doing the work for many of us every day, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
When I think about, let's just take one of the more recent situations. You know, we've got this this Mr. Snowden, who brought to the attention of the world that this this spying that was supposedly looking for terrorists is ubiquitous inside our country. Also, that we share resources with our allies in Europe, but we spy on our allies in Europe. We share resources and spy on our allies in Central and South America. You know, we know that there's basically, we're walking around inside this TV bubble, and
Right. We're
all being monitored. And when you see the trouble this fellow has been in, he's basically nationless now, if one to take the current situation at face value. And this is for letting everybody know what we'd already, our worst guess was, we're all being monitored. Lynn Steward, who passed on information from her client, this is not an academic argument to her. She was essentially charged with aiding terrorists when she was just trying to get information out. If a prison sentence doesn't necessarily mean you can be held incommunicado. There is certain human rights, and clearly, you know, this country has been prepared to walk past human rights values for quite some time.
Yeah. And it's been really disturbing. You know, I was a huge Obama supporter in 2008. I volunteered for Move On to help his campaign. I gave money to politics for the first time in my life. I danced around my kitchen the night that he won the election. And now I'm suing him. And the arc from then to now, it's been a very painful and difficult arc for me because, you know, I'm a Democrat through and through. I believe in resurrecting this party and realigning it with the principles that it was supposed to be founded on, just like we need to realign with the principles our country is founded on. And that's a very strong civil liberties and human rights and Bill of Rights foundation. And so it's been just really so strange and awful to not only witness Obama taking Bush-era constitution-weakening policies and extend them quite a bit, but to fail utterly in explaining, you know, providing an adequate explanation to the public for why he's doing this, how he's doing this, and what it means. He promised us greater transparency. He promised to roll back Bush-era abuses. He hasn't done either, and in fact, he's in some ways been worse on the civil liberties front than Bush was. So, you know, all along I kept thinking, he's going to come out and tell us that he's got a ton of intel about these certain things that are happening that is forcing him to curtail our liberties even more in order to protect this nation. Well, maybe those things, maybe they're getting chatter behind the scenes in all of their surveillance. Surely they are. Still, there needs to be a more fine-tuned balance here of protecting our liberties and our national security. And they've gone, as far as I'm concerned, this government has gone completely off the deep end on that front.
Well, no one would argue that there can't be any secrets. But by the same token, no one has ever argued that we can't have any privacy. There has to be a balance. Obviously, that balance is violated if every communications you have with anyone, anywhere, anytime, if it's electronic, it's sampled. And unfortunately, saying that it's just metadata, while that works for the average uninformed, untechnical person, those of us who know about how technical data is stored understand that if you have the metadata, you can paint a very, very accurate map of behavior.
You can, and you can use that retroactively if you wish. I mean, like you said, who knows what kind of tyrants we will have in this country in the future. So setting up this kind of infrastructure where so much power has landed in the lap of the executive office and the courts are failing to be a proper checks and balances in Congress, certainly is failing to do so. You know, that's it's bad enough as it is now. But if we have someone who's rather tyrannical in the future, I mean, it's a very scary thought. We shouldn't have paved the way for tyrannical behavior. And it is. I can actually provide you, for your listeners, a simple example. For the NSA surveillance, when I started dealing directly with WikiLeaks, Kristen Hoffman, their Julian's spokesman, told me right away in an email, you should understand that henceforth all of your communications will be routed through the NSA. This is in 2011, and I had to get used to this idea over time that I might be being surveilled. And there were multiple occasions when it seemed abundantly clear that I probably was a target of surveillance, and now we know, after my extensive interaction with WikiLeaks volunteers, that in fact I was dealing with an FBI informant. I had flown out to New York City to meet this kid. He downloaded software on my computer. Allegedly, he started working for the FBI later in the year, but we have no way of knowing. And the ACLU warned me on no uncertain terms that the simple fact of my trying to defend Julian Assange and WikiLeaks based on First Amendment grounds had led me to be a target, or at least in, you know, on the radar of the U.S. government, and certainly I was being surveilled, if not actively set up to take a fall in their zeal to bring down WikiLeaks. I'm a law-abiding, moderate Democrat who votes in every single election, who was being trained to run for politics in the Democratic, you know, to run for office in the Democratic Party. I mean, I'm not a radical. I get annoyed with anarchists. I may have a unique name, but I am as moderate as it gets when it comes to politics. And for me to get used to this idea that everything I've done has been surveilled was awful enough as it is. But now with these hops, these NS, the way that they collect metadata, so if I'm sort of flagged to sort of watch my communications, then three people out, so my Facebook friends and the friends of friends and their friends of friends, can all easily be swept up because I talk to WikiLeaks. I mean, I don't know. People say, if I'm not doing anything wrong, I have nothing to hide, so I have nothing to fear. That is a ludicrous reaction. I'm so sorry. It has nothing to do with whether you have anything to hide. The Constitution assures that U.S. citizens have a reasonable measure of privacy as long as there's not probable cause to investigate them. And the government itself, in order to function as a democracy, it has to have a very high level of transparency. And that equation is completely in the inverse at this point. So, like I said, we're not a police state now, but we've certainly set up the infrastructure for one, and that's totally unacceptable.
Well, if you look at the last election as any kind of token, last election cycle on the presidential level, we were offered John McCain and Sarah Palin. That was
exactly
a real, real possibility. But I want to ask another question, one that troubles me very, very greatly, simply because of all the free speech advocates I know and have read for many years, this battle has yet to be joined as well. How long have we tolerated free speech zones? How many elections have we let the powers that be frame those who would dissent, frame those who oppose peacefully? How long are they going to be kettled? And if it starts with kettling simply because you're raising your voice, well, we've seen what Occupy was greeted with. And this was not the action of any individual officer any more than the behavior of the National Guard in Abu Ghraib was the behavior of a single individual. These were orchestrated strikes. And again, it troubles me because here with the stakes so low, they've gone to that extreme. Where are they headed
next? They
really
have. Well, and they passed H.R. 347 last year, which was the bill to restrict protesting. You could be charged with a felony if you're too close to Secret Service just for protesting peacefully. Recently, though, which I found really interesting, the Supreme Court passed a law that you cannot protest on Supreme Court grounds for the first time in the history of this nation. And that was not that long after. In February 6th, we had several hundred people, between 300 and 400 people, show up to try to come to court just for a Second Circuit hearing. I mean, these cases are normally completely obscure, and we literally had hundreds of people show up and had a big press conference afterward. That's because what we created was this hybrid case and campaign where we back up our lawsuits with global crowdsourced campaigns. And we had literally several hundred people show up, so many that they had to provide us two courtrooms and at least one or two overflow rooms, and people were still spilling out in the halls. It was shocking, and it was interesting because not long thereafter, the Supreme Court passed a law that you cannot protest on Supreme Court grounds. And, you know, I don't want to take too much credit for that, but I'm sure that, you know, that must have gotten back to the court. I mean, we've started something new, which is really increase interest and civic engagement with the courts. We're basically helping educate people about suing the government and what that entails, and getting people inspired enough to show up in New York City. So, you know, it's just, I agree with Chris Hedges. He tends to be a lot more cynical and a little bit more bitter than I am, and understandably so. I mean, that man has seen the best and worst of humanity and has worked.